Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at www.sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the September 10th edition of Commodity Week. USDA still says it's a bin buster crop, but smaller. We'll find out why today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with the Lynn Group's Executive Vice President, Roy Huckabee. Our panelists in studio include Bill Mayer, Strategic Farm Marketing out of Champaign, Illinois, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities from New Market, Indiana, and Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group from Decatur, Illinois.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Well, let's start with this question today. USDA on Friday morning released its latest WASD in crop production figures. In the crop production numbers for the soybeans, it increased. That's right. It increased the number of bushels to the acre. Soybeans might yield to 44.7 on a very large soybean crop. Do you think they can be that much in the field for beans yet?
Well, at least the early yields that we've heard are very strong. Some people, though, that I visit with kind of feel that the late-season beans, at least in the lower half of the growing area, are going to fall off sharply. So that'll be interesting to see how that goes forward here in another few weeks.
Dan Zwicker is with ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois. Bill Mayer is with Strategic Farm Marketing from Champaign, Illinois.
Yeah, I'd agree with Dan. The early field reports that we picked up on are definitely showing some better-than-expected bean yields, and most farmers are pleasantly surprised, even in some areas where the corn yields were just really down compared to the last couple of years. So, you know, whether the late beans hold in there or not, you really don't know till you get out there in the field with beans, but we've heard some tremendous yields here early.
And Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities from Crawfordsville, Indiana, and New Market, you should have a lot of beans and a lot of corn out of the field
by
now.
We've been very active over in our area, Todd, and I'll tell you what, the bean yields have been very good to what we thought they might be, even in some of the areas that we thought that we'd see a setback because of dryness. I think the biggest thing is going to happen to see what they actually yield in some of those areas in Iowa where the SDS is supposedly affected them. To what degree has it affected them? But the pod count is definitely there. We know that from the Pro Farmer trip. We had one farmer in our area that had a five-bean pod. He said he'd never had one in 27 years of farming, and he kept it and set it aside, and they were all nice full beans. But we're also hearing a lot of reports of some of these later beans being smaller, BB size, and odd-shaped. So maybe some of these others with the later moisture, and if we don't get another rain for these double-crop beans.
On the weekly trade in Chicago, September soybeans had a high at $10.49, a low at $10.22 and a quarter. Remember, that's the high, the low. And we'll give you the settlement for the week in the day and the overnight trade. September in the beans settled $10.23 and a half, down 6 and a quarter on the week. November, the new crop, down 4 cents at $10.31. USDA's Friday numbers from the crop production report tells us that there's a 3.483 billion bushel crop. That's 50 million bigger than they said last month at 44.7 bushels to the acre. What else did we see in those numbers and those that came from WASD that you found of interest for the soybean?
Well, demand did go up. I think there's room for a little larger export number. We'll have to kind of see how things play out, but I think you have to be a little optimistic that demand's going to climb a little bit more on beans. And like my initial reaction is, you know, it's not surprising to see USA come out with that number. The big question is it going to hold up as we go down the road? And I think there's some skepticism on whether that will happen.
For the coming production year, the one that's being harvested at this point, they say left in the bin at the end of the year, the stocks will be down 10 million from the last time they made a prediction at 350 million. You think that's close enough?
The 350 million is for this coming year, correct?
Right.
Yeah. I guess I think that the two things. One is that I would agree with Dan that the demand, I think, is going to be higher than what they've currently got written in there. I think that could be up to 150 million, probably higher than what they've got in today's report. And the other thing is, from a price standpoint, I guess I just, you know, the corn is going to dictate, I believe, where we go on the soybeans in general terms.
I know you're all itching to get to the corn, and we'll make it there. I've got one more little question. He mentioned price. USDA, Wayne, gave us a range. Of course, they always do for average cash price for the year. They raised it 65 cents, 915 to 1065, and that is an upward adjustment of 65 cents on both ends.
Yeah, Todd, and I think that that's probably well warranted because of our front-end loading of export sales to China, their added interest in looking to keep adding here. You know, we think that they're probably going to be aggressive buyers again, but they're going to wait till we see a little farther harvest to see if it is that good. And down in that 980 bracket or so basis in November, we look for them to be active buyers again.
Dan, let's take a look at some of the rest of the numbers as they came in from the corn pit. We'll stay with the average cash price. It now ranges for corn from $4 to $4.80. It had been $3.50 to $4.10. So they brought it up 50 cents. Mid-range is now $4.40. It's the highest mid-range for corn that they've ever produced for the cash side. Do you think it can be done?
Well, that seems kind of strong when you talk about an average for the year. That means that we're going to be at $5 or above on futures for at least a good portion of the marketing year. And well, I'm in the bullish camp. There's no doubt about that. I don't believe we've done any rationing, and even though USDA's balance sheet implies that we may have rationed by bringing the carry out down today, I don't think we've started. I don't think that's what the carry out is today. I don't think there's been any rationing at all. And actually, I think USDA is probably still conservative on export demand. So I think the balance sheet is much tighter than that. And so the market, as a rule, if we're going to ration supplies, often goes to an extreme price level, and I don't think 450 here, 460 where we're at, or I guess we're up to 475 on D's corn, is not an extreme price level under current environments and is rationing demand at all.
Corn futures in Chicago this week went to a high in the September at $4.65 and a half, a low at 442 and a quarter. Their settlement price was up 14 and a quarter at $4.64. December settled at $4.78 and a quarter for the new crop. It finished up 13 and three quarters. The rationing that Dan suggested has not happened, but USDA thinks maybe is in the process of or will be as we get through the marketing year. Really only takes place in one place. That happens where? In the livestock. And they're suggesting domestic usage will be down 100 million bushels for the coming year.
Yeah, and I think, I listened to some comments by President of Smithfield yesterday, CEO of Smithfield, when they came out with their revenue numbers and just talking with individual hog producers. I think that you're starting to see, as you look out next spring, not negative margins by any means yet, but you are starting to see some of the expansion plans that were in place or being put in place, kind of being put on the back burner now. And I think that's where we're at on the livestock side pretty much in general, poultry probably the same way. So have we started? I mean, no, I would agree with Dan that we probably haven't started it yet, but when you start looking out to the spring prices, July corn up there right at $5 on the futures, I think we're starting to get people's attention.
Wayne, here are some of the rest of the numbers as they came out from USDA Friday morning. They say it's a 13.16 billion bushel crop. That's down 205 million from the last time around made in August. It's still a record breaker, the number one biggest crop, if it actually comes to fruition, harvested by corn farmers in the United States. It went from 165 to 162.5 bushels to the acre. And then some of the exports were up, 50 million. They didn't change, I don't think, the ethanol number. They dropped the number for usage domestically for livestock by 100 million bushels. And we've got that 440 laying out there. Are your farmers bullish that they're going to wait?
I think that most of the farmers have sold more than they wish they had at this point in time, because we've all sold it lower, and I'm one of those people. But, you know, there's two things. The feed number can be dropped because they did leave that ethanol number up there, and the DDGs do replace corn that we generally figure in the feed portion of that. Also, as we look here, I think that it's because of the Russian wheat not coming into the feed market is what's going to make our corn worth a little more. And their delaying and not getting wheat planted over there is also going to help the corn export market. You know, we're not going to export that much more wheat, but we are going to have some. But the big thing in the corn is the demand is there, and this is a demand-driven market. And we have to remember that $5 isn't the $5 we remember from 10 years ago.
I'm always looking for the pitfalls. What might be out there that could halt the whole thing?
Well, we still have to get through a stocks number, and there's always can be changes in the stocks number. We could end up with maybe 150 more million bushels worth of supply that we thought, but it doesn't look like it'll be an earth shaker. But and then maybe the yield doesn't come down anymore. I think the market is trading a yield down closer to 160 than probably 162.5, or at least that's kind of the drift I get. So maybe those yields may not come down. The other thing that I continue to watch is the dollar, and the dollar does look like it would like to rally. I think all it needs is some kind of reason, and if the dollar would begin to skyrocket to the upside, you could still get some deflationary pressures across the economy.
I think this is unofficial, but the last time I had checked, ADM was kind of thinking maybe there was an extra 250 million bushels of usage there. We actually moved things around by 300. We need to put 300 million in to get things equalized.
Well, ADM doesn't necessarily have a position.
So I know, that's what I said.
They don't. Talk in the trade feels that maybe export demand could be up around, you know, 2.2, but that has a lot to do with price also. And, you know, we are bringing the supplies down. We're bringing the prices up. So maybe some of that larger demand numbers that the trade has talked about over the last couple months may not necessarily materialize.
You know, livestock uses an awful lot of corn, and it's showing up in a couple of places. Well, go on. You have something you want to say?
I just want to follow up on what Dan was saying. I think I'm not sure that the USDA is fully taking into account the drop in the exports from Russia and what that effect may be on our feed grain exports. I think that's kind of where we're at right now. And I would agree that the exports probably could be higher than what they accounted for there today.
Okay, I'll come back and start back up with this question, because livestock, he mentioned the grain stocks. Livestock, we talked about the 100 million bushel drop in usage USDA is predicting over the coming year. We mentioned the grain stocks is something that could change, and that has to do with the feed and residual number probably, and that's a livestock number too. And that could really change things. We'll know a lot more, I suppose, when we get to that grain stocks report at the end of this month, won't we?
Yeah, I think we'll know more, you know, how it turns out with the quality and everything that we've talked about all year, you know, since last year on the 2009 crop. I don't know. We had a lot of carryover grain and a lot of damaged grain, and, you know, how much is on hand versus how much is on hand that is really usable is another question, too.
Yeah, well, you got to keep in mind residual use is unexplained disappearance, and that disappearance could be USDA is carrying too big a production number from last year. So you don't know until we see the numbers, and then we'll have to kind of back out of it and see how we want to play that.
About a minute and a half left after the report this morning. Are you more bullish the corn market, and where do you stand on the beans?
Corn, the trend is higher. Beans look like they're turning sideways, going to be range-bound until we know a little bit more about production.
I would agree, kind of a consolidation mode on the soybeans. I don't know that I'm any more bullish on corn. I think that I have to caution myself that we have done a lot of work here already.
Bullish corn, and I would be bearish beans, except corn's going to keep them from falling apart.
And what happens, I'll ask one more question, what happens with the maturity of the east or the western crop? Do you think it can stay as large as it is, or will it get smaller over time?
Corn or beans?
Corn.
The corn? I think the corn crop is probably in pretty good shape out there.
You're listening to Commodity Week. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. Our guest in a moment that we'll talk with is Roy Huckabee. He's with the Lynn Group in studio with us. We just heard from Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group is here, as well as Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing. This edition of Commodity Week was recorded on the 10th day of September 2010. I'm Todd Gleason in studio with us today. Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing out of Champaign, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities from Newmarket, that's in Indiana, and Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. Our guest on the line from his Chicago office is Roy Huckabee of the Lynn Group. Roy, thanks so much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
When you and the rest of the crew in Chicago got a look at the numbers this morning, did you find any surprises?
There were a few surprises. They weren't all in the crop report. I guess that if I go through the report, I think the USDA has missed some things, and your gentlemen on the panel have already caught some of them. I think that the wheat S&D is weak. They have not shown as big an increase in U.S. exports as I think they should. They took spring wheat carryouts down 10 million and hard wheat carryouts down 30 million, and I think they're still 200 million too big. We're not going to export very much soft red wheat. We're going to export a lot of hard wheat and a lot of spring wheat into Europe and into parts of the world that need to replace the cheap wheat they've been buying out of the FSU for the last 3 or 4 years.
So when you take a look at USDA's numbers, what kind of parameters do you have as far as price goes as we go over the next 60, 90 days here?
Well, I think that the wheat market is kind of broken. It's hard to talk about what these fundamental changes mean for Chicago wheat market, but I think that the one thing that stands out to me is that the quality wheat values have to be materially higher than soft wheat values. The world doesn't want to buy our soft wheat. We only have two major buyers, and that's Mexico and Egypt, and Egypt's buying hard wheat. In the export sales report this morning, Egypt bought 660. Well, Egypt bought half of that. The rest of it was sold to unknown. We assume that that is also Egypt. Of July 11, a hard wheat out of the United States. That's 12 months out.
Roy, we had a discussion here on, you know, the price of corn and whether it starts rationing at these levels or not. I'd like your opinion on that. And, you know, where you kind of come in as far as that subject?
I see no signs of rationing at this point. The ethanol margins are still extremely good, spot only. They're not bad if you go forward. I don't see anything that's red. I think that if you look at a monthly margin calculation all the way forward through next summer, they're from break even up to a 10 or 11 or 12 cent profit. The margins over the last couple of weeks got as high as 90 cents a bushel on corn if you hadn't hedged anything. But that's because of the big inverse in the ethanol margin in the ethanol futures. I think that the world, the driver in the United States has become very used to using ethanol, and our ethanol consumption continues to go up. And by the way, we're exporting ethanol. You look at the sugar prices in Brazil, we're going to export some more ethanol because they're going to export sugar, not ethanol made from sugar. So that's what I see happening, is that the demand base is getting entrenched. And profitability in cattle, profitability in hogs, profitability in poultry. I wish I could say profitability in the dairy sector, but I don't think it's there too far out. So I think your domestic demand will stay very strong. At the same time, your export demand is going to stay very strong. One of the problems with the FSU numbers that the USDA has put out is they're calling FSU wheat, wheat. And we all know that they've been selling a lot of feed wheat around the world, and you don't sell more wheat to replace that feed wheat, you sell corn. So I think the USDA is 100 to 150 million bushels short in their corn export projections.
Isn't it true, though, and I want to back you into a corner just a bit on this one, that out of Russia, they sell milling wheat. Out of Ukraine, they sell feed wheat.
They sell feed wheat out of Russia, too.
But it's the primary, isn't it the primary source of milling wheat?
Well, Ukraine has milling wheat also.
Okay.
The problem in Russia is that the whole area went through this drought. The area that's had rains has tended to be the northern areas. The northern areas is where they plant spring wheat. The south is where they plant winter wheat. And the South still remains very dry. And I've been guilty of saying myself that if they don't get all the spring wheat planted or if they don't get all the winter wheat planted, which they plant in the South, they'll come back and plant spring wheat next year. Well, the areas that have had rain are in the North, where they plant only spring wheat. They can't plant spring wheat in their southern areas. That's a winter wheat product. So I think that there's an issue, not with the supplies this year. The world was very lucky in that when we carried in a big increase in supplies this year, and now the problems in both FSU and the northern parts of Europe have now eroded those excess supplies. So we've always said this, we're one crop failure away from a disaster. We really are this year. If we have a problem anywhere else in the world markets on wheat, the wheat market comes back to life and we don't know how high it goes. But I come back to the demand side. I was very pleased to hear from your panel that it's demand, not supply. We've had a building demand picture. I mean, we sold corn to China this year. We think that China has a problem with their old crop corn supplies, and they have used their surpluses to hold domestic prices down. So they now want to replace those inventories, and they've got to buy 20, 22, 25 million tons of corn next year to replace their government inventories, their reserves. And if they try to do it in a year when everybody else is trying to buy corn to replace the feed wheat and the barley out of the FSU, we can get really tight.
You know, as we look here, you and Dan both agree that we haven't started rationing corn yet. What price can we take this corn to? And if I'm a farmer out here, what level do I start selling again?
Yeah. The question I'm continually faced with is, I've sold 65% of my corn. What do I do? And that's been a question that I've found repeatedly over the last 3 or 4 weeks. This corn rally is not very old. It's really moved very rapidly. It started with the June stocks report, the end of June, the June acreage report, and that's where these changes started. And then the production problems started to manifest themselves. My projections, I guess, would be that corn goes to about 5.25. And we'll see if that starts to ration something. If it doesn't, we're going to go to 560, 575. I would suspect it takes a 550 trade to ration, but the longer it takes to get there, the more entrenched the user becomes, because we are seeing some people stretch forward now. before the report today, I was amazed at the number of people that decided they had to get something bought yesterday. And typically on a report like today, where we saw people fade the initial opening, corn opened 4 or 5 higher and then broke a dime, traded 4 or 5 lower, and wow, did it come back rapidly. The corn market is laboring between really big speculative length and a user that's basically uncovered, both in the domestic market and the export market. So what we find is that on the weakness, the user steps up, and on the rally, not always does the guy that's long sell it out.
I have a question, and I think I'd like everybody to actually answer this. Generally speaking, historically, the livestock market has contracted, but we've gotten to the point where we've got big players in the livestock market. Not a lot of little players, and that's where the contraction has taken place. Maybe, Roy, you can take that up first. Do you think that it will contract at the rate that USDA – it doesn't have to be at the rate USDA is suggesting, but will it contract? Can it contract, or is it more stable than it used to be?
More stable.
Dan?
It's more stable, but I think you got to keep an eye on the cattle. I think the cattle feedlots are the first ones that are going to do the cutback. I think the hogs will chug along, the chickens will chug along, but I would be watchful for the cattle.
Yeah, and I think it's the hog and poultry are more stable, and that kind of got proved in 2007-2008.
I agree with Dan.
Okay, so a second, then a follow-up. So exports tend to be stable one way or the other. They don't tend to go away no matter the price, and that can be proven in the stats.
Are you talking exports in meats or exports in grains?
In grains. Grains and oil seeds.
You've got to put meats in there. They're growing.
Yeah, okay. And then so I want to come back to the ethanol. So ethanol's in the mandate, but they can buy, they can move ahead what they've used, right?
One comment I would mention on ethanol is that people, it gets complicated, and I don't want to get too far in the weeds, but we do have this thing called RINs. And there's a lot of RINs out there because a lot of people, it was economically feasible to use blends this past year. So there's a lot of RINs out there. So if this thing does kind of get into an unprofitable situation for the ethanol situation, there is RINs out there that they can use that would maybe cut back on demand. So yeah, that is a possibility.
I'm searching for the place that will ration the RINs may be able to do that in one way for ethanol, but it doesn't. I doubt that that's very much, is it?
There's quite a few out there.
And quite a few. Roy, what do you think?
I think we've gotten used to burning ethanol. I think if you slow the ethanol production down, the front month of ethanol goes through the roof. The ethanol capacity is our replacement for our aging refinery base. And if you look at the way we're running our refineries, 85% capacity is a big deal. So what we're doing is we're making ethanol to replace gasoline that we're not making anymore. I think it's hard to ration, but I think you're on the right track that when it comes down to the real cutting, that ethanol has to be our residual user and gives back some corn supply to the rest of the demand.
Thank you so much, Roy. Roy Huckabee is the Executive Vice President of the Lynn Group. A final word from our panelist in studio, Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group.
Go Salukis.
I'm going to edit that. Go Illini.
I was going to say go Illini. Be careful out there. Be safe. Sit down and look at your gross dollars per acre compared to a year ago, including the fact that you have less drying cost, and make sure that you know where you're at as far as the corn market goes.
Bill Mayers with Strategic Farm Marketing. Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities.
We're more bullish corn than beans, but beans aren't going to sit still if corn goes to the moon.
That's been the September 10th edition of Commodity Week. Thanks for listening. I'm Todd Gleason. You can visit us online at willag.org. That's WILLAG.org.